Last week, I joined about 20 of our Wyoming Catholic College students at the local office of Wyoming Game and Fish for 2 days of hunter safety training, followed by a day in the field, actually hunting. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, Director of Distance Learning here at Wyoming Catholic College and your host for these After Dinner Scholar podcasts. Wyoming, in addition to being a destination for skiing, hiking, backpacking, rock climbing, has some of the best hunting and fishing in the country. Unlike skiing, backpacking, the like, however, when you hunt or fish, you take an animal's life. The trout, salmon, deer, pheasant, elk, or pronghorn we hunt dies. How exactly does that fit into Catholic theology and faith? Some might answer not at all, and yet, with the exception of dairy, regardless of what we eat, be it venison chops or pork chops, something always dies so that we can live. It's a fact of life from which we typically buffer ourselves, purchasing meat in styrofoam trays sealed with plastic wrap, with little hint of the animal that gave its life so that we could live. But could it be that a direct encounter with animals and death and life is good and right for us? To discuss that and other matters related to life, God, creation, and human dominion over creation, we're joined by Dr. Jeremy Holmes, theologian and hunter. Dr. Holmes, how did you start hunting, and how did that raise theological questions for you?
Well, you know, my older brother was a big hunter when we were young, but by the time I was of hunting age, we had moved into the city, and I didn't really get that experience. I always wondered what that would be like. So when an opportunity came up in Wyoming to join the Game and Fish Forever Wild program, I leapt at it. This was a marvelous program that takes in entire families, teaches them hunter safety, takes them fly fishing, pheasant hunting, deer hunting, teaches them how to look at the maps, how to handle the guns. It was an amazing all-around program that made it possible for my wife and I and all of my children down through the infant to get out into the field. The part I had expected was that being outdoors is wonderful and hunting is a fun challenge. I had not expected it to raise new thoughts for me about how Christianity relates to hunting in the wild. Those thoughts came in part through the Game and Fish presentation of their mission. To use their lingo, they manage herds. They manage populations of wild animals. They keep track of diseases and how those are spreading through, both for the sake of the elk and deer themselves and because those diseases might be communicable to domesticated animals. But I had never thought before of the hunter's role as playing into taking care of the wild. I always thought of the hunter as, I don't know, mooching off the wild? Go out there and get free meat that Mother Nature raised for you, and you just have to shoot it and eat it? And the Game and Fish folks did a wonderful job of introducing us to a new concept of the hunter as participating in caretaking, stewardship over all those areas that are outside the farm.
Well, you spoke to our hunter safety class last week about Psalm 8. Tell us about that psalm and how it relates to hunting.
I was asked to talk to the students about my reflections on how hunting related to Christianity, and immediately Psalm 8 came to mind because of its mention of the wild animals. And I've always loved Psalm 8 simply as a poem. If it's all right, I'd like to just talk for a moment about the poetry of Psalm 8. It takes you on a quick tour of the cosmos. It begins with the refrain, "How great is your name, O Lord our God, through all the earth." It ends with that same refrain, but when it repeats that refrain at the end of the psalm, you have a new experience of it because you've just had this tour of the cosmos where you see God's name being great through all the earth. Then in the second sentence, it has us look above the heavens. It says, "Your majesty is praised above the heavens." So we look up not just at the sky, but to whatever is beyond the sky. And God's name is praised up there. Then it says, on the lips of children and of babes you have found praise to foil your enemy, to silence the foe and the rebel. And children and babes, I have a number of those at home, and they're knee height, you know, or lower. So your eyes go from above the heavens suddenly down to close to the ground, and implicitly you encompass everything in between. God's name is praised high and low and everywhere in between. Then the psalm takes us back up high to bring us a little more slowly down. When I see the heavens, the work of your hands, the moon and the stars which you arranged. Now we are looking at the sky. It's a nighttime scene here. And that is inspiring us with a kind of a sense of our place. What is man that you should keep him in mind? Mortal man that you care for him? We're astonished that God would even have to give us the time of day when we see what he can do, the awesome beauty, which is just a reflection of him. Yet, that's the beginning of the next sentence, right? Despite that awe we feel, it says, yet you have made him little less than a god. Or the Septuagint translation here has, you have made him for a little while lower than the angels. Our heads are sort of bumping on the heavens. We're just below the angelic realm in the position he's given us. With glory and honor you crowned him, gave him power over the works of your hands, put all things under his feet. So we've been looking up at the heavens, and then we look down at man, and we're sort of horizontal for a moment, and we realize, whoa, he's made us little less than a god. And then our gaze goes down to the things he's put under our feet. So once again, our gaze is swept from high to low, seeing everywhere a kind of message from God. And along the way, we have found our position in the world, and it's the position that Genesis 1 gives us, namely, we've been made in the image of God, and therefore we've been given a dominion over the earth, which is not the absolute dominion of the Creator, but the subordinate dominion of a steward acting on behalf of the true Lord of all this realm. And so as we come to survey the things over which we have power, it's not with a feeling of hubris, it's with a feeling of gratitude. Then the next sentence gets us into a kind of catalog of all the many things we've been given dominion over, all of them. Sheep and cattle, yes, even the savage beasts, birds of the air, and fish that make their way through the waters. That is to say, the whole list of things from Genesis 1 that God has created to be in the earth, the sky, and the sea. But what interests me is this word, even. He says, all of them sheep and cattle, and then he says, even the savage beasts. So it's as though sheep and cattle we were kind of expecting, you know, in terms of our dominion over things. The denizens of our farm that eat our corn and plow our fields, yes, we were anticipating dominion over that. But that we've been given dominion even over the savage beasts, that startles us. That those things don't live in our realm. We're thinking of our dominion as being our home, our farm, our town. But the psalmist is marveling that God has put us in charge of everything on the land and in the sky and in the sea, even if it's from that totally other realm where the wild things are. You know, those maps that have a little label, there be dragons. Psalmist is saying, you have responsibility for that part of the map too. And there's a startling thing comes with that. Wow, even that.
And whatever dragons you happen to find there.
Yeah, right. So I guess one way of describing my experience with the Forever Wild program here with the Wyoming Game and Fish was that my reading of this sentence increased my marvel that we are in charge of these savage beasts, but my experience with game and fish brought more consciously into my mind that the word here is stewardship. That dominion implies responsibility, that my relationship to the savage beasts, the birds of the air, and the fish that make their way through the waters is not a passive one like a tourist. I don't just go out with my binoculars to see neat animals or take a cruise to look at the weird things in the water or watch planet Earth and wonderful videos like that. There's an actual active responsibility to take care of these things. And since the time Psalm 8 was written, that responsibility has grown more urgent. It is no longer automatic that all these various creatures have their habitats, are in good health. It is in part up to us who are spreading ourselves out to make responsible decisions about what's going to happen with these animals God has entrusted to us. And that involves things like herd management, which involves things like hunting.
I thought it was interesting that our hunter safety instructors from Wyoming Game and Fish had their own spiritual reflections about hunting. Several said it's not about killing, it's about harvesting food, which has that stewardship sort of aspect to it, as well as a reflection on the fact that something has to die in order for us to eat and live. One instructor showed us his kit for field dressing, and it, you know, there were ropes, and there were knives, and there was this, and there was that, and he goes, oh, and that's my rosary. He said, I kind of get choked up when I kill an animal. Another instructor said how she prays prayers of thanksgiving, often with tears in her eyes, and how much she enjoys putting that food that she harvested on the dinner table for her family. What has been your and your family's experience on the spiritual side of hunting?
You know, those senses and sentiments expressed by those game and fish folk map closely Genesis 1, where the original plan is portrayed as all life belongs to God, and it's only later, after the flood, that mankind is even given permission to eat the animals, seeming to emphasize the semi-sacredness of animal life. I mean, there's a bright line drawn between human life and animal life, but the idea that animal life too belongs to God is really emphasized there. And that sense that animal life belongs to God, I think, comes out perhaps less strongly when we swat a mosquito, you know, a little more strongly if you, you know, you're cleaning a fish, but it's when you harvest a big animal like a deer or an elk that you really feel that. There's this magnificent creature in front of you that just a moment ago was the epitome of grace and is now bleeding out its life on the ground because of something you did. And you really do have to face that moment and have a place for that moment in your overall view of the world. My daughter and I went out and harvested a couple of white-tailed deer with the Game and Fish, and it was both exhilarating and also a little difficult. One of the deer had trouble actually dying, and we ended up needing help from the Game and Fish in the end to put her down in the most merciful way. You know, it's an amazing thing that you can do that, and yet later, yeah, it feels right to be eating that meat as a Christian with a worldview in which these animals are noble but have their place, as Psalm 8 would say, below man's feet. The Christian worldview allows us to elevate the wild animal in its, you know, its nobility, to have that sentiment of this is something semi-sacred, and yet not make out of them a kind of untouchable, to keep them in an overall vision of the cosmos in a relationship to man.
I think it's implicit in what you've said, but let me ask you one last question. How does hunting fit into the vision of Wyoming Catholic College? These were our students there getting hunter education and going out to shoot upland game birds last week. How does that fit into our education?
A huge part of our educational vision has to do with immediate contact with things. We're trying to move away from, for example, you ask a group of people, how many of you have seen a whale? A bunch of people will raise their hands. If you ask them, no, I don't mean on a screen, many hands will go down, right? We're trying to emphasize the importance for education of direct contact with reality. So that's both in a general way, we want people to just be out in nature, but it's also in specific ways with specific experiences. So we're trying to communicate this Catholic vision of the universe and it's the structure and the plan that God has for it. There's no way to come to appreciate that vision, the vision of Psalm 8, the vision of Genesis 1. There's no better way to internalize that than to go take part in it. Don't read about the wild animals. Don't think about the wild animals. Go play your part in taking care of these wild animals, which includes harvesting these wild animals, and you're going to understand what Genesis 1 and what Psalm 8 were saying in a way that you would never get just off the printed page.
Last week marked the first time in nearly 50 years that I hunted for game birds. And there's no question that there is something sad about hearing the explosion of the shell, feeling the recoil, and watching a flying bird fall to earth as a result. At the same time, it has the feel of something very human and appropriate. It brings us closer to the fact of our embodiment, of our food, and of what it means to have dominion over all sheep and oxen, and also the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, and the fish of the sea, whatever passes along the paths of the sea. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.